So that's, you see, that's the logical conclusion of what Shankaracharya started. He taught the Mayavadi philosophy, but he kept it respectable by keeping it within the purview of sannyas. He actually said, in order to realize this philosophy, you have to take sannyas. Prabhupada always talks about that. He made this, you have to take sannyas, you have to follow very strictly this, you know, the four regulative principles, everything. And they, actually he was just tricking them to take up some kind of indirect devotional service. They worship the deity, they follow regulative principles, and so on and so forth. But by establishing that philosophy, he left the door open for these fellows to come on later and say, actually you can do everything, anything. Because it's all the same. There's no difference. So, in the sense of what you're pointing out is true, that they're no longer concerned with philosophy. You know, they've just kind of reached the the logical end of Mayavadi philosophy, and it just doesn't concern them anymore. They will also consider the Mayavadis, the classical Mayavadis, to be very neophyte. What are they worried, you know, following their rules and regulations? They're on a very unfortunate platform. They haven't realized. They're following like this because they also haven't realized everything is one. But we know everything is one. Soul, body, Krishna, me, her, Radharani. It's all one.
All sex.
Huh? Yeah, it's all sex.
See, would we complicate to say that all these are actually based on practical biology?
Yeah, definitely. I should say it again. That division is just like for convenience of presentation. You could organize them probably in other ways. But because on that line, especially, you see this illicit sex behavior very prominent. Therefore, I use that to point that out. And on this other line, you see more prominent philosophy, you know, some speculative philosophy. But many, as far as I know, on that side, the jnana side, only, as I said, only the Kartabhajas are actually strict. The Bhavas are notorious. They're really notorious for all kinds of nonsense, which I won't even be able to talk about in this class. It'll be too filthy. And the other ones also, Neda, Dalavesha, they're just loose, you know. It just doesn't matter what they do. That's their thing. It just doesn't matter. We'll talk about them shortly. Anything else? Yes?
If they express the Mayavadi philosophy outright, like when they say they can engage in this activities and then have their sovereign and realize comfortable high spiritual. So then animatarialist, whatever it does, should also bring it to highest consciousness.
Yeah, that's... Well, that's what's happening in India now. That's Hinduism. You know, Nehru, the president of India, the premier of India, after independence, he told that, look, this is modern times, you know. So your temple, you're all Hindus, you want to worship God in the temple. So nowadays the temple is the factory. So do your worship in the factory and help India become strong. So he was the leader of India. He preached this. And then they were hanging up posters. I've seen them. Lord Shiva dancing as Nataraj with four arms, dressed in factory overalls. And in each hand there's, you know, the wrench, screwdriver, you know, a different tool, you know. You really want me to sing? No, there's... Well, there's also men and women, you see, can dress up like sakis, together. I mean, you know, not that we have to tell everything.
You sometimes hear about that, you know, like that one is dressed up like Krishna, another one is dressed up like Buddha. That's not really that.
Well, so one may dress up as Krishna. You see, it's all. One may do the owl thing for. It's all. Please, you know, there's one thing. When you get in this realm, it's not like, you know, they're strictly following some kind of. You know, there'll be some who are, you know, owl one day, Saki Biki the next day, you know, Gauranga Nagari the next day. They just, you know, it's open, it's free. But I think, what time is it? Oh, 12. I think we should go on a little bit faster. So, Chudadhari, this is very short. One other thing. Another meaning of Ati Bari. That this Jagannath Das, he is supposed to have, it was reported by his followers, that he is supposed to have revealed to them an eight-armed form. You see, and Lord Chaitanya only revealed a sixth-armed form. So in that way also, Ati Bari, two arms more. Things like that. All right. So, yes?
Yeah, you just said in Shanks, and it seems like there was no sense of information on the letter of the meaning.
As I said, Shain comes from Goshani, or actually it's Shain, you can say it Gosain or Gosani, so sometimes it's written Sani, Shani, Shain or Shani. So Goshain or Goshani is just Bengali slang way of saying Goswami. So it just means there are any number of bogus kinds of, you know, pseudo sadhu sannyasis in India. So it's just a general term.
For any of them.
Well, in a sense, because they all hang out together. When one goes to holy places, one sees how these sadhus, they gather to, you know, it's like in the 60s, there was this hippie movement. Now that's gone, actually. But there was a time when young people in the West, they were dropping out and they were going to some place like San Francisco. And they're all gathering together, you know, living 20 in a room, sharing everything, you see. And it's a kind of brotherhood feeling. So in India, this has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years. This hippies have always been there. They're known as Shains. And they go to a holy place and they all gather together, share their food together, share their hashish. And like that, it's a kind of brotherhood feeling. Yeah, yeah. That's the original Darvish, but in Bengal, some of them became attracted to Krishna Kirtan. So there are some Muslim fakirs, they have written songs glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they, you know, remain in the habit of the Darvish mode of life. Well, there's some form of Muslims, but they never had any contact with Mahaprabhu's movement, so it's a completely different thing.
Again, the lesson to take from this Neda, Daravesh, and the bowels, especially those three, is this point of what we said, syncretism. They mix in other religious traditions or elements from other religious traditions into some form of so-called Krishna consciousness. So that we see today may not be going in these particular forms, Neda, Darabesh, or Baal, but you have people who mix Christianity with Krishna consciousness or something like that. Try to make a new blend in the name of universal, you know, this is more universal. This is the actual way to preach. This is the way that you attract people. If you're looking too much like a Vaishnava, you know, dressing in dhoti kurta with tilak, then the Westerners won't understand. So it's better to dress like a Christian monk, perhaps. So this is nothing new. It just is old forms. Daravesh, they would dress like Muslim, fakir. Neda, dressed like a Buddhist monk. Same thing.
Mm-hmm. In the spiritual realm, it seems that if you look in the West or whatever, you don't have any senior that has been already done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just old wine, new bottles, that's all. Looks different on the outside a little bit, but the essence is the same.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell about these Hari balls in the circle?
What? Hari bowls with the serpent. There's not much to tell. It's another feature of that. They had their leader, something like Ati Badi. He was already some kind of big yoga teacher, had his own community in Hawaii, teaching Kundalini Yoga. But then he got Prabhupada's books and he started to read them. So he started to... He introduced chanting of Hare Krishna and got his followers more and more practicing Krishna consciousness as well as doing the Kundalini Yoga. And then finally got to the point where they were going on Sankirtan, on Harinam. So the ISKCON devotees would be on one side of the street in Honolulu, Waikiki Boulevard, you know. So the ISKCON devotees would be on one side of the street. The other side, there would be all these long-haired persons playing guitars and singing Hare Krishna to kind of like pop melodies. So then finally they just joined this person. He finally surrendered. He realized that actually Krishna consciousness is more powerful than what I'm doing. So he joined. But after joining ISKCON, he got initiated. He also got sannyas. But after some time, then he became, again, dissatisfied. He wanted to do it his own way again. So he again started to introduce the yoga. He once gave a program in which it was like a lecture, Krishna conscious lecture. So the hall was filled, and then he got up on the stage and said, "Now I'm going to teach you the method of mystic sleep." So he had everyone lay down. He told them, "Now you lay down on your back and you close your eyes and meditate on something, you know." And so then he started his lecture. But because they were all laying on their back, they all went to sleep. So so they didn't get very much from his lecture. And he used to give, I actually heard one time a tape of his lecture, and it was interesting how he would speak. There were these kind of subtle things he would put in his lecture. He would say that because people were so fallen, so Jesus Christ came and he preached and he established his religion. But in his short life, he could not accomplish everything. He could not bring people to a higher platform. It was just the beginning. Therefore, he felt his mission incomplete. And he said, I will return. Then there was a pause. So that is why I have come. Then he would just go on, you know. And if you listen carefully, there's some special meaning he's trying to give, you know, underneath it all. So anyway, he got a lot of followers in the Pacific region, in Hawaii, New Zealand, Australia. And there Sadhana was surfing. They even had a little company that would make surfboards with Lord Nisringadev on them, you know, like under the, what is this called? There's this lacquer they put on the surfboard that keeps it very smooth. So under that there would be Lord Nisringadev, so he wouldn't get wet from the water. And so they went surfing. And but they, in 1975, they broke off from ISKCON. They suddenly evacuated the temple in New Zealand. And when the ISKCON devotees came to take over, then they found that the Radha Krishna deities in the temple had been mounted on a rotating altar, an altar that could be turned. So that during the kirtan, the deities would face the devotees. Then the Sunday feast was held out in the yard. So then the deities would be turned, the altar would be turned around, so the deities would look out through the window. There was a window behind the deities. And then, so while taking prasadam, they could all look up and see through the window the deities watching them. Radha Krishna would watch the devotees and guests take prasadam. So this one devotee from Australia came there to take over the temple after they all left to start their own thing. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada describing this altar arrangement. And Prabhupada's answer was, Radha and Krishna are not the Rolling Stones. So, Prabhupada kept his relationship with them. There was two or three, this one who started, and then he had a couple assistants. They'd all accepted, they'd all taken initiation from Prabhupada, taken sannyas from Prabhupada. So even after they left ISKCON, Prabhupada kept kind of relationship with them, just to encourage them, actually to distribute his books, because they did distribute Prabhupada's books. So what they would do is, by other means, they would make money and then they would buy them from the BBT and they'd just give them out for free. But Prabhupada said he didn't mind as long as the books went out. So for that reason, although there was always a big friction after that between the ISKCON leaders, like the GBC of Hawaii or Australia and the Siddhasvarup group, just gave away the name. His name was Siddhasvarup. So anyway, actually he doesn't go by that name anymore anyway, so. Now he's Jagat Guru, what is it? Some Karmi name, Jeff Butler or something. Jagat Guru Jeff Butler. He got married. Anyway, so Prabhupada maintained the relationship in spite of all the friction because they distributed books. It was an interesting thing. Prabhupada sometimes even used to defend him a little bit, not very much. But after Prabhupada left, then he got, they wouldn't give him any more books.
So this Adivak group, you explain how that different means, but sum it up, that the Sama means?
It just means too great or too much.
Like the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, too many Bhagavatam chapters, too many arms, too advanced, you know, too high realizations. Are they in the West, you mean? Is that what you're asking? Practice seriously. Well, I mean, yeah, you can... It's a way of looking at it and saying they practice what they do seriously. In the West, I've heard these sahajyas, some kinds of sahajyas are coming, who are yeah, the Bowels, actually, Bowels came to perform kirtan in America many years back. The devotees wrote Srila Prabhupada asking if they, you know, could go to their programs and, you know, also maybe go on stage. That was in the late 60s, and the ISKCON devotees didn't know anything, you know. They just saw advertised one day at some club somewhere, the Bowels from Bengal. And Prabhupada wrote back, don't have anything to do with these people. But I have heard that some of the, yeah, some kind of sahaja type group has been coming into the West, giving this kind of initiation into the rasa. Actually, whatever you see of this phenomena in the West, it's very definitely appearing on the heels, or, you know, just behind the progress of ISKCON in the West. Just like originally Mahaprabhu started his Sankirtan movement, so then around the edge of it, these things started. So it's the same thing in the West. They're just new versions of these groups. So, we can imagine that as Krishna consciousness spreads, there will be homegrown varieties started in the West, but then as this cheap mentality spreads, then there will be gurus in India who will see, good chance for me also. And then they will come and start something. It's already like that to some degree, that after ISKCON became prominent in Western society, and it was seen that bhakti was attractive to the Westerners, then even some of the bogus gurus who had come to teach yoga or something like that, then they started to change their program a little bit. You know, they would also put in some chanting, chant Hare Krishna mantra, but chant the Rama part first, Hare Rama, and then Hare Krishna, like this. Have to change it a little bit, so it's different. There's a big organization in Hawaii, just an example of this last thing I was talking about. They're actually Shaivites. It's called the Shaiva Siddhanta Society. So the guru of it is an American who got initiated into the Shaiva sect in India in the late 60s. He was also, you know, some kind of hippie who went to India and he took initiation from the Shaivites. So he came back to the West, and he was starting something up, and he took all of his ideas how to establish his group in the West from ISKCON. And even to the point, I mean, you would think that they would be impersonalist, but actually they very much stress that God has a form, Lord Shiva. And you know, they have deity, they have everything. They bring Brahmins, Shaivite Brahmins from India to do puja. You can see they've really taken from ISKCON the Vaishnavism and tried to transfer that kind of enthusiasm and following strictly the tradition into their practice.
Which group does the old Gopi Baba Club belong to?
Old Gopi Baba Club. Well, that they would certainly all classify that under Sahaja as a general heading. I think that would be about as far as you can go. If you can't fit them in anywhere else, you can always put them under Sahaja. Yeah. Yeah, as I said, the sahaja means, I was telling this yesterday too, that it's all very easy and natural, you know, to become a pure devotee, or to realize your relationship with Krishna, realize the Supreme Truth. So there's no purification, that was what we were reading today, no purification is required. In fact, the more fallen you are, the better it is. Because these great Vaishnavas, they all said they're very fallen. So if you're fallen, if you're sinful, that's your good qualification. So there's no reformation needed. And so anyone can come to the Guru, give him some money, and he will meditate and say, yes, you are an expansion of Lalita, named such and such, or something else. There was one of his disciples in Vrindavan, American disciple in Vrindavan in the 1960s, who actually he got this kind of initiation from one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. Now, you wouldn't expect that, because in the Gaudiya Math, you see, ISKCON, the practice of ISKCON and the practice of Gaudiya Math as established by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is the same. So they don't give this kind of initiation. But after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati left, then these influences started to come in to the Gaudiya Math. So, to be specific, of course, this godbrother, he was not actually anymore in the Gaudiya Math. He had started his own thing. But after Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati left, then these kind of influences were coming in, and the Gaudiya Math split up. So different of his disciples would establish their own maths, and then some of these tendencies became visible. So this disciple of Prabhupada, he, in Vrindavan, he got reinitiated by this godbrother of Srila Prabhupada, and he was told, yes, he's given a new name and told that he was a peacock. It looks like the standard position for all the Westerners. And Prabhupada was very
very disgusted. He was disgusted with the, first of all, with the reinitiation. He said, this totally breaks all Vaishnava etiquette. And secondly, he was, you know, this peacock idea. So, and then in Vrindavan, in especially around Radhakund, so many places, but especially around Radhakund, you have these babas, babajis, and they're all supposedly in the Raganuga Bhakti line. They're supposedly following the lifestyle of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They dress in that white cloth, two pieces, and they beg. And they have also recently, I heard something like 12 disciples of one of the ISKCON spiritual masters in India went there and got mass reinitiation by these Radhakund Babas, and, you know, received their rasa, it was revealed. So then they sit there in Radhakund and they do their bhajan, their japa, and they try and meditate on their rasa with Krishna. So this is going on. So the main thing to understand about that is that, you know, this Krishna consciousness as established by the acharyas in this line means that one has to start on the Vaidhi Bhakti platform. This whole idea that you start at Raganuga, this is the essence of sahajya. That without, you know, without any austerity, without any discipline, you just get your mantra, you get your rasa revealed, you know, and there's a mantra for the rasa that you chant that helps you meditate on it. And then you just start to enter into that bhav, you know, and that becomes your spiritual life. So they're just sitting around and imagining, I'm a gopi. And they read the scriptures in that light, you know. Probably they won't read Krishna book because Prabhupada's purports are there, but they'll read some maybe direct translation or someone's re-explanation of the pastimes of Radha Krishna and the gopis. And they read it in that way, that, you know, trying to relish it as being one of the gopis. And then if they can, you know, if they can work themselves up to some point where a little tear or something comes in the eye, then that's the prema bhava. Now it's coming. The ecstasy is coming.
Such a personal
thing
to say that actually I am following the principle based speaking. I'm going through all these stages, but you, it's not about that you're not really on that platform yet, so therefore, you know.
What they're claiming is that actually they are great Vaishnavas. You see, the principle in ISKCON is dasa, 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 anudasa. Prabhupada always said, we don't think that we're Vaishnavas. We think that we're servants of Vaishnavas. It's the great Vaishnavas like Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, on down the parampara. Yes, they're relishing the internal relationship with Radha Krishna. But we never think that we're on that platform. Rather, we serve those Vaishnavas to get their mercy. And so the way to serve, that's shown by Mahaprabhu, is to engage in the Sankirtan mission, spreading the Sankirtan movement. And that's what ISKCON is all about. So that's actually our business. That's the mood of a real devotee, actually. He doesn't care for, just like it describes in the Nectar of Devotion, when Dwarka was fanning Krishna, he was fanning and the ecstasy, some ecstasy started to come, and his hand was trembling, he couldn't fan anymore, so he fixed, no, I have to fan, this is my service, never mind this ecstasy. So this is actually the mood of the advanced devotees. There's a technical name, Anubhava. that they remain fixed in their particular service. Whereas their motivation is, they may say they're following strictly, and maybe they are, but there's a motivation of it, to come up to some point of ecstasy. You know, to suddenly the consciousness opens up, and there's the spiritual world, and here I'm a gopi, and there's Krishna. In fact, I've spoken with devotees who have leaning in that direction, and they say things like, "I don't like this, I really just don't like this, you know. In our books, it says that, actually, in Prabhupada's books, the whole line coming from Rupa Goswami says that, you know, forget about trying to be a gopi, like a principal gopi. That even one comes to the highest platform, one is a servant, you see, of those gopis. Like our greatest acharyas, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they're manjaris. So manjaris means that they're young servants of the gopis. They're manjaris, the spiritual form is like a little girl, 7, 8 years old. And they don't enjoy directly with Krishna. They're too little. What they do is they pick flowers and they make garlands and things like that, and they give them to the older gopis. And then there's, of course, a whole chain of service. Then the older, you know, there's among the older gopis, there are those who are more confidential, ultimately to Lalita, Vishakha, Radharani. And actually, finally, it's only Radharani who's actually enjoying with Krishna, unless she pushes forward one of her associates. But Prabhupada says the associates don't care. Their happiness is just to see Radha and Krishna enjoy. That's all they want to see. So they make arrangements for this. Like we sing in the song in the morning, Nikunji Yuno Rati Keli Sidai. The spiritual master is always engaged in making the lila of Radha and Krishna more perfect. Nikunji Yuno Rati Keli Sidai. Sidai. That's his service, to enhance the enjoyment of Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. So the greatest devotees in our line, Rupa, Sanatan Goswami, they were manjaris. That means there's no desire at all to stand next to Krishna, to embrace Krishna. It's just not the position. So as I said, I've spoken with some devotees who have the leaning to the sahaja side, and they say, I find this very difficult to accept. I want to approach Krishna directly. Why should there be someone between me and Krishna? This is their attitude. So yes, they may be doing so many things, you know, chanting so many rounds and eating a handful of rice every day or whatever. But you watch, they're only going to do this for some time. Because that what they want will never come. They can eat one grain of rice every day for, you know, 100 years, and they're never going to stand next to Krishna, you know, with Radharani over on one side watching. This is what they want. Therefore, sooner or later they fall down, despite their big claims. That's all. We've seen time and time again. Those who are claiming this, you know, to be practicing Raganuga Bhakti, this is where it ends. There was that one, you know, the most famous splinter group that happened after Prabhupada left. They went to his godbrother in Navadvip. So many, many ISKCON devotees went to that site. And it started off that, you know, this is more strict, this is more Vaishnava, this is more pure, you know, they're more concerned with the actual, you know, developing the love of Godhead rather than just running around a lot of passionate activity, you know, in total forgetfulness of Krishna. So that's how it started. And how did it end up? It ended up that, you know, well, The highest thing is Raganuga Bhakti. So, you know, there were those who are claiming, we've gone up to Raganuga Bhakti. So, on the Raganuga platform, then they're saying, well, you know, you do what you feel like doing. So if one morning you don't feel like getting up, so you sleep. That's also Raganuga. And you don't have to chant all these rounds, you know. Why chant 16 rounds? You know, 4 is enough. So they started giving initiation to later gurus who were those who left ISKCON and followed that sadhu in Navadvip. He made them to gurus. And so they started giving out initiation 4 rounds and try to follow the 4 regular principles. At least say that you'll try. So that's where it ends up. Because the motivation is finally, let me enjoy. You know, they start off thinking, let me enjoy spiritual ecstasy. It's much superior to material ecstasy, but let me enjoy it. And so for some time they're furiously going on, trying to, but it doesn't come. So then they get into this idea that, well, we have to be natural. That's Raganuga, that, you know, be spontaneous. So spontaneously, I don't want to get up in the morning anymore. Spontaneously, I don't want to chant any more rounds. This is my devotion to Krishna.
Mm-hmm. They could also interpret the, as you just mentioned, this verse, you could genuinely know that as soon as you get spiritual guru title, then you can enter the rasa of serving already, you know, get immediately into the rasa of intimate service with, you know, to help the gopis and have to serve. But it seems that there's some who are taking this kind of position as guru, you know, they are not on that.
Well, nobody will claim to be on that platform, even Prabhupada. He never talked about, they would ask him, he never would speak about this. But the point is, this Nikunja Yuno Rati Keli Siddhai, you see, that's accomplished by serving the Guru Parampara. What's being said is that by your service, you're enhancing the enjoyment of Radha and Krishna. So, if one is in the line of Parampara, so alright, Lalita, Vishakha, they're directly enhancing. Those two gopis, they're the most expert in making, they're simply the masters in making arrangement for Radha and Krishna's enjoyment. They're directing the whole show. All the other gopis are doing what they say. And then there's a whole line, then beyond the Sakis, there's the Manjaris and so on, and it goes. So the Parampara is connected like that, that we just want to serve the exalted Vaishnavas. And if we serve them nicely, then our service is actually, this is what it means, it's actually going up to that point. It's going up to the spiritual world, into Goloka Vrindavan, right to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. I mean, we should be very clear on this point. Although it may seem to us, I'm here in Krishna's gourd washing a pot. You know, what does this have to do with Goloka Vrindavan? But because one is in the disciplic succession, it actually has something to do with Goloka Vrindavan. Radha and Krishna know about you washing this pot, and it's giving them pleasure. Because it's actually not the activity of scrubbing the pot, but it's the bhakti. If one is actually devoted and properly connected, then that is being accepted by Radha and Krishna. That is increasing their happiness. Everybody's service right now is doing that. So, but if someone is thinking, it means that I just, you know, come crashing in, you know, hey, get out of the way, you know, Lalita, move over, you know. Here, I have something for Krishna. Krishna, you take from my hand. No, I won't give it to Radharani. You take it from my hand. You know, then this is just a big disturbance. And this is their idea of the spiritual world. And there's Krishna up against the tree, and all these people rushing, take this! No, get out of the way, take this! This is a, you know, this is why Krishna has, it's always, he has to be approached through the Vaishnavas. And greater than worshipping Krishna is worship of the Vaishnavas. That's why the whole system is there. And if one doesn't accept that, then, you know, one has actually no position, and therefore they all fall down. The matter, you see that it is this. So actually, when you study the matter, you see that it is this movement, ISKCON movement, which is actually, in which devotional service to Radha and Krishna is actually being presented in the proper mood. It's a fact. And everywhere, you know, this upstart mood, you know, that, yeah, you are, you know, you are such and such in the spiritual world, and now you meditate on this, you know, you're with Krishna, talking to him. This is all just hallucination, actually. Just a fantasy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, such people, they may have some kind of realization in their, you know, their concentration, meditating like this, in the mood of sense gratification, he said. It's in the mood of sense gratification, meditating on being with Krishna. And they may have some kind of, you know, vision in the mind or whatever. But that will just be, just like their attitude is perverted. So what they perceive is also just some, like, perverted reflection. It's not actually Krishna. They may say, last night I saw Krishna. I saw him. I heard his ankle bell. But you know, Maya is Krishna's servant. You see, Maya, she's the master of the illusory energy. So her business is those who are insincere, she keeps them in illusion. So she can do these things too. Yes. I mean, you know, Maya's manifesting so many bogus Krishnas anyway, you know, the Aulas and Chudadharis and... So...
Is it also fair for us to distinguish between chanting japa and chanting kirtan? Like, you know, it's more enjoyable to chant kirtan to death or discard
or the thing is that one can serve according to one's taste, that's no problem. But one should not fall into some kind of foolish duality. You know, if you like to chant japa more than kirtan or vice versa, if somehow you feel more contact with the holy name, then you can, I mean, you still have to do both as is prescribed, but you can try to take advantage of your attraction to the one and, you know, do that more, or try to absorb yourself more. That's all right. But that doesn't mean that then you should, you know, like they do, take one thing out, you know, just like cut it out of the rest of the process, you know. Sanatana Goswami said, I will be a darabesh, and they just cut out this verse and then dress up like a Muslim and say, you know, this is everything. You know, this is whimsical. We have to accept the whole process. And we also have to understand that if I'm attracted to one thing over another thing, that's not necessarily a sign of, you know, some kind of special rasa that's developing. You know, it can just mean that we're, you know, insufficient, you know, have insufficient attraction to the other thing. But by Krishna's mercy, this one thing, just like someone may be, you know, most attracted to take prasadam. So, but we don't hear, I mean, of course there's advancement, but we don't really hear of anyone who develops that service to the ultimate goal. We never see someone just sitting all day, all night in front of a plate of prasadam, just taking and taking and making more and more advancement. And finally becoming the acharya. He's sitting on the Vyasasana, still taking, telling what's happening in the spiritual world with each bite. We can just consider ourselves very fortunate if we are very much attached to take prasadam, that's very nice. But then
on the force of that attraction, we should develop the other attractions that are necessary.
Yeah. Prabhupada also said that if you try to enjoy the sadhana, it will be
Actually, that's a good point. That's a good point you're making. That mood of enjoyment, one becomes fixed on some particular activity simply because it gives him more enjoyment than other things. So then, when he's offered the chance, you know, some Prabhu comes and says, "Look, some other service that we have to do." He says, no, I don't like to do that. I'm only doing this." So that's just his sense gratification. But Vaishnava means a servant. A servant, and we, as we said, not servant of Krishna's lotus feet, and that's it. But actually Mahaprabhu said, servant of the lotus feet of all the servants of the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So one who's actually advanced, he sees, he just takes the opportunity to serve Krishna from wherever it comes as Krishna's mercy, being delivered by the Vaishnavas. Maybe I like to sit and chant some bhajan or whatever, or eat a big plate of maha. That's what I like to do. But if someone comes with some service, then we should see that our position is to serve. So then I can leave aside this for later and go do that service, because that's actually the function I am to do. Someone else had questions?
Yeah. I like the ghost of a doubt.
Ghost of a doubt?
Yeah, because
I was thinking that... But that means the doubt is dead.
So, the doubt is that because we will never actually be with Krishna personally, meeting, then there will not be actual separation from him, because there will not be actual separation, this doubt of separation, the whole one has to meet him also first. Therefore, we can never approach this overseer, so we're doing this process. We're the only mental.
We really reached some far out conclusion. The thing is that one associates with Krishna through the service. This is, I mean, if one is really advanced, then that's how he realizes Krishna, through the service. Just like the gopis, they were separated from Krishna, but yet again not separated, because in his bhava expansion, he was always there with them in their service. And actually, that mood is even more advanced than the meeting. So, we are now, you are now separated from Krishna, because you are in his bina prakriti, his separated material energy. So you are right now separated. Like in a big company, big building, you join that company and you're put in the cellar. That's, you know, to pack boxes or something, or carry out the garbage. That's how you start. And at the top of the building, there's the big boss. So you want to catch his attention. You want him to notice you're working. So how will you do it? Will you, you know, sneak up the stairs, you know, in your overalls that you use to take out the garbage? You know, you just sneak up the stairs and then come down the hallway. And when the secretary is not looking, you run past, and then you barge into his office while he's in the middle of a phone call, and you stick out your hand, "Hello! My name's Tommy! I'm working in the cellar!" What do you think will happen if you do that? So therefore, if we have that opportunity, somehow or other we've been accepted into the company, and even if it's just breaking up boxes and putting them in the garbage in the cellar, we should do that nicely. We should be enthusiastic. And then the word will go up, the different, you know, workers. Oh, he's the one who's supervising you will say, "Hey, he's very enthusiastic," to his supervisor. And it will go back. And then finally the boss will hear about it. There's a very enthusiastic young man. He's newly joined the company, but he's really doing a fine job in the cellar. So when the boss hears that, then he may come down to see, or call you up to see him. "I've heard about you, you're doing good." So in that way, you mean, by the natural arrangement. And that's how it works in the spiritual world too. We shouldn't think about it. But if we're doing nice service, it will be naturally arranged, that meeting. And those who are pushy, they lose their position. That's the fault of these sahajas. But you see, the problem is, it's a subtle form of the same idea to become God, to become number one, you see, to push past all the others, push them out of the way, push even Radharani out of the way. And then there's only you and Krishna. Then maybe there'll only be you as Krishna. If you learn how, you see, you watch, get next to Krishna, watch what he's doing. And then, yes, he holds the flute like this. Yeah. Okay. This is how they think. But they don't come that far. So, we have a couple minutes left. Any last questions? Yes, Mataji.
You mentioned, especially when you are speaking about these vows, that they don't have any writing practice that they know that we have. And it seems like all of them should start by themselves and
Yes, that's true. That's obviously true, because they don't have any Vaidhi Bhakti anyway. They don't do that. So whatever they're doing, it's certainly not Vaidhi Bhakti. The whole point, as we mentioned this, the whole tendency starts with this pratishta, this sense of being, I want to be very important Vaishnava, very big Vaishnava. So in this way they artificially try to make big advancement. Artificially try to imagine themselves being on the highest platform. So the point of the bowels is simply that they are very disrespectful to the Vaidhi Bhakti process. They think it is like foolishness. They look down very much on anyone who's practicing Vaidhi Bhakti as wasting their time. So that's why it's significantly connected with them.
What was the point for example, this left part of the world and the right part of the world?
You mean left part here, you mean? Yeah, the Sampradaya? Yeah. This is because we want, yesterday we were establishing, if we want to talk about Appa Sampradaya, first we have to talk about Sampradaya. So I was explaining the Sampradaya. Ours as being, it says here, descent of Srimad Bhagavatam. I was thinking last night it might be better to say descent of Bhagavat Tattva or something, because it wasn't only Srimad Bhagavatam, it was Bhagavad Gita. Madhvacharya specifically received instruction from Vyasadeva for his commentary of Bhagavad Gita. And also Madhvacharya, he got Vedanta Sutra commentary and he was teaching Bhagavatam. So might be more correct to say in general, the Bhagavad Tattva, the right understanding of the Bhagavad Shastras dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's our Sampradaya. We're explaining that. We're explaining the branches here. And also how this Dvaita Sampradaya comes in, and the Dasakuta, the Harinam Kirtan tradition. It all meets with Madhva. So in Madhva is said to be the founder Acharya. It all meets in him.
From that time they were performing, because you say also that Madhvacharya and Prabhupada return many times, and that he was the principle of Saranagati, this famous verses from Madhvacharya, and the pure devotional service. And so those who were following until Vyasa Tirtha, they were performing pure devotional service.
Yeah, this Madhvacharya established this in his writing, Shuddha Vaishnava, pure Vaishnavism. And Rupa Goswami, he has taken his definition in his writings, what is Shuddha Vaishnavism, from Madhva. So obviously, you see, because sometimes there are those who question the whole connection of the Gaudiyas with this Madhva Sampradaya. They have different arguments. We were talking about them yesterday. But we see in the writings of the great Acharyas, Rupa Goswami, and also Baladev Vidyabhusan, and Gaura Gona Desha Deepika, also
the Sampradaya is affirmed. So, yes, what happened was is that after Srila Vyasa Tirtha, then the Madhva line in Udupi, the Tattvavari line, they went in the direction, because Vyasa Tirtha, he was controversial actually. He's this star indicates he's one of the Dasakuta, big Dasakuta, Hari Dasakuta Acharyas, very much into kirtan, preaching. He saw no reason why he can't accept disciple from Shudra class. He was giving initiation to this Kanaka, that was his disciple. But then his Brahmin disciples, they didn't accept Kanaka. You see, so this was the split. Then after Vyasa Tirtha, they kind of became much more, you know, this caste conscious, less devotional, not very much interested in kirtan, because connected with the kirtan is the whole idea of initiating people from low class, so don't do too much kirtan, we become crazy. So that's why there was a split. And Lakshmipati, he went north and took Madhavendra Puri and so on. And then Lord Chaitanya came back and he gave them the sauce. So then after that, then they're doing also, the Madhvas are doing more kirtan than before.
But, yeah, as far as we were with Maharaj there, as far as I see, they appreciate kirtan, but they don't do themselves. They bang gongs and bell.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, the tradition of kirtan was there through here. It's with Narahari and Vyasa Tirtha, these two, especially, they personified this. They were gurus in the line, but they themselves took it up. But somehow, you know, it didn't really become established. So that practice, the kirtan, down here, it became perfected. Complete. Mahaprabhu, the same thing. Because that's very long-standing, this kirtan with mridanga, kartals, this is very, very ancient. This is the Dasakuta tradition. This, you know, these adyas, very old Vaishnavas doing it. So it reached its perfection down here. And that's the reason for this split. It's good to know, because people sometimes raise this question. Why, if you belong to Madhva Sampradaya, why when Mahaprabhu went to Udupi, he just argued with them? There was no, you know, not like he was coming to his home temple or something. He just was criticizing. So they say, we don't believe that there's a connection. Your scriptures say there's four sampradayas, but the Chaitanya Sampradaya is a fifth one, it's something different. So then that's their conclusion. So you're not actually bona fide Vaishnava. You try to argue.
It seems that the Adha Sampradaya, they are very much attracted to the Radha Krishna principle, because they exist very much around this Sampradaya, specifically like Gaudiya Sampradaya or Vallabha. Yeah. Vallabha, yeah. Acharya also, because he has also these things, they are very actually around, but around the Sri Sampradaya there's not so much.
Yes, the Ramanandi. There's a whole, actually many branches, but they're all called Ramanandi. There was one Ramananda who thought that the Sri Vaishnavas had become too strict, too Brahminical. So he wanted to preach Srila Ramanujacharyas to the common people. So he made things more liberal. And then after him, there was many, you know, branches. And you see some Ramana, generally they're all keeping long hair and beard.
White.
Hmm?
Those who are completely white.
Sometimes they're dressed as saffron also. Different, they might be white or saffron. They all have big Ramanuja tilak. And they generally will all have long hair, well, tied up like this and beard. And some of them are quite strict. Some of them, you know, very strict sadhus. Like almost like a form of yoga mixed with Vaishnavism. And others are like these shines or something. They're smoking hashish. They're, you know, like that. Madhva Sampradaya, I never heard of any. anything because the mudras are very, they're very heavy.
But because there's only Krishna, they don't involve Radharani in this. Madhacharya was not
Yeah, that's... Yeah, in that sense, too. Yeah, actually, among the Ramanandis, they all worship Ram. But some of them also, they have this similar thing with Sita Ram. They make Sita Ram into Radha Krishna, and they try to get the same thing going. But anyway, when you go away from the this, you know, around the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, then you see so many also, all different kinds of sects in Vrindavan, which are not actually connected with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they invent their own idea. Which?
The Brahma Sampradaya. Because I heard once that there are also others in the field which are not so common, so they are not listed.
Well, yeah, these are the prominent Vaishnavas, but in this list, I mean, this is, you know, Madhva was the disciple of Achyuta Pragya, like this. I think, yeah, some places there are gaps of like 400 years like this, some hundreds of years. This is straightforward. One disciple, you know, after another, like that. This is all straightforward. Here, of course, between Madhva and Vyas, Madhva went to Himalayas to meet Vyas. But in our, you know, in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we're not concerned. I'm only explaining how the Madhva Tattvavadis, how they look at the Sampradaya themselves. But the Gaudiyas just say Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyas, then Madhva.
Maharaj, is this the argument that they all just imitate the Madhva Sampradaya and not the Madhva Sampradaya?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The philosophy. Is there? Madhya Lila?
Could you explain shortly about what was
it? Why don't you read it? Since it's there, you can read it. Yes, Mataji? What is it, about 1100, 1200 AD after Christ? So it would be about 800 years ago, between 800 and 900 years ago. Martin? Here? Yeah. They're all Brahmanas. But you see, that's because at that time in India, that was the system. Sampradaya, that is teaching. This is a line of Vedanta philosophy, so that was reserved for Brahmanas. That was the tradition.
That's why we said that, therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the reformer. That he accept, just go back to his Brahman or discuss his things.
Yeah. Yeah, it had already started before, but it was like controversial. And then when Mahaprabhu came, he established it. Actually, then after that, it has become more or less established everywhere. You can say directly as a result of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence all over India. All right, so it is after one.
Sure.
What? I didn't know it was so late. I thought it was one.
Yes, Mark.
Yes, Prabhu. Well, as I say, the oldest ones, sahajas, owls, Gauranga Nagari, Jati, Jati Gosai, one might, Smarta certainly. Ativadi, they go right back to the time of Mahaprabhu. They started while Mahaprabhu was manifesting his pastimes on the planet. Some others, like Kartabhaja, for instance, they started later. Yes?
Scientifically, you can prove Srimad Bhagavatam up to 800 years old.
What do you mean by scientifically?
Some people prove that it's 500-year-old book.
They have no proof of anything. No. They don't have any proof.
I mean, they. If you look for references to the Srimad Bhagavatam in other writings, it goes back well before the time of Christ. But that in itself is no proof as to where the Bhagavatam. There's no. You know, there's no alternative explanation that anyone has ever found that says that the Bhagavatam was not written by Vyasadeva, not spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikrit 5,000 years ago. All they do is they try to verify it from some other source. They look and see someone else who's accepted has mentioned Srimad Bhagavatam or quoted a verse from it somewhere. So they look around and they find here and there. And then some fool may say, well, you know, it started here with this one. This person lived 800 years ago and he mentioned Bhagavatam, so it must have started then. But what kind of proof is that? And anyway, the actual fact is that this kind of proof, it actually goes back even before the time of Christ. So that means it's, if you accept that kind of, you call it independent verification from a so-called neutral source, it means not a Vaishnava, then in any case you go back to more than 2,000 years ago. And it doesn't give any proof how the Bhagavatam started. It just means someone mentioned it. Someone mentioned the Srimad Bhagavatam, some verse or something or like that. That doesn't establish anything.
There's sometimes in libraries they want to prove that it's 500 book.
Well, then they have to read what Prabhupada says. That's the proof. The proof is, you know, given by the Vaishnavas.
So this word sambhara, like your sister sambhara.
Pratishtha Sambhara means like a mood or something like that. Mood of becoming very important. Yeah, you can just say Pratishtha, that's enough. But I just took these from this book, Vaishnava K. What kind of Vaishnava are you? These terms Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has used.
Yes, Manaji.
Yeah,
the cause is exactly that, lack of sincerity. Everybody's got anarthas in their heart, including the desire for pratishtha, name and fame. Everybody has that, who's coming out of the material existence and taking up spiritual life. So we have to become purified of it. And those who don't, it's actually like it's explained about the devotional creeper and the weeds. So you're watering by chanting Hare Krishna, but if you're not careful, the weed is growing and it chokes the actual bhakti creeper. And in the beginning you can't tell the difference. Which is the weed, which is the creeper? They both just look like little plants. So, and then one grows. If it's the weed grows, and after it gets very strong, it chokes out the creeper, and then it bears its fruit. But the fruit is not anymore love of God. Fruit is something else.
as seen here, sahajya, ao, bao, etc.
All right, we should stop now. Srila Prabhupada, good day.